In the late 1980s, Jacob Bernowski, a noted mathematician and scientific historian, hosted a series on BBC and PBS called The Ascent of Man. And in this series, Professor Bernowski traced the rise of human civilization through its scientific innovations. In the first show of the series, Professor Bernowski stated that there was one innovation that occurred 10 to 12,000 years ago that was responsible for enabling human civilization to progress from a nomadic band of hunter-gatherers to where we are today with all the marvels of technology and innovations at our disposal. Things such as the James Webb Telescope that will look back past into deep time to the very beginnings of our universe, the ability to communicate over vast distances and not only talk to one another, but to see each other while we talk, the ability to quickly develop medications to thwart and deal with diseases, and so many other things. What was that innovation that triggered the development of our civilization 10,000 years ago? It was the wheat seed, and learning how to plant and harvest those seeds. By learning to cultivate wheat, groups of people could transition from a nomadic way of life that was always on the move to staying in one location. And because they could stay in one location, they could grow into bigger groups. And with larger groups, people could specialize and subspecialize in skills and knowledge. This stability allowed them to acquire new knowledge, develop new technologies. In essence, this stability allowed these groups to develop into communities that could provide the benefits of relationships, innovation, and protection that smaller bands of nomads were unable to do. And to illustrate his point, Bernowski contrasted our modern civilization to the Bakhtari, a group of nomads who to this day herd sheep and goats. These people live much as their ancestors have done for thousands of years, always on the move, living in small family groups, keeping only those things needed for survival and that they can carry with them. From that time 10,000 years ago, let's fast forward to 60 AD. And from our scripture today, we find Paul writing to the churches at Corinth. Corinth is a former Greek city that has now become a Roman colony. It is a seaport, and because of its location, it is a natural trading center between East and West. It is an urban center with a vibrant economic system. The population was estimated to be over 200,000 people at the time that Paul wrote this epistle. The city contained a mix of Greeks, Romans, Jews, people from Syria, Egypt, and Asia Minor. It was a melting pot with each of these groups importing their unique customs, rituals, and religious beliefs. And into this dynamic mix, a new religious movement was being born. This movement was based on the teachings of a rabbi from Galilee. This movement was so new, it was not even called Christianity yet. This Jesus movement had been brought to Corinth by traveling tradespeople and missionaries, such as Paul and others. And we should note that the growth of the church in Corinth relied heavily on the work and mission of women at the time. As this Jesus movement grew, people of means in Corinth would allow their houses to be used as churches so that groups of people could gather, learn about, and develop the rituals and tenets of this new movement. We must remind ourselves that this religious activity was taking place in the very early days of the Jesus movement. Given our vantage point of 2,000 years later, I sometimes forget and underestimate the impact of the newness on this new religion. It should not be surprising that people in this new Jesus movement would gather in homogeneous groups. Jews with Jews, Greeks with Greeks, Romans with Romans, and so on. And coming from different cultures and religions would develop different takes, practices, and rules on how to do this new religion. And it should not also be surprising that as these separate house churches developed and grew, different beliefs and different values would proliferate. These differences between house churches not only became apparent, but actually would create great tension when these house churches would gather together as one group across the entire city of Corinth. And so for all the advantages we see in living in community, supporting one another, accomplishing more than we could as individuals, possessing different skill sets and gifts, we also see the difficulties of living in community, the differences between people and homogeneous groups within the community can create tension, that these divisions and tensions cause dysfunction and disharmony within the community. And this is something that not only impacted the early Corinthian believers, we need look no further than our own denomination or our society today to see how vile this negativity between groups can become, how this negativity can tear groups apart, tear communities apart. It is this tension and these differences that Paul seeks to address in our scripture today. He does so in a very interesting way. He compares the greater Christian body in Corinth to the human body. I love the way he does so by describing the inclusiveness of it all, that each body part, each person is important to the well-being of the entire community. In fact, it is almost comical the way he describes the ear saying, "Because I'm not an eye, I don't belong to the body." Paul makes the point that if the entire body was a single organ or a single body part, the body would not be a body at all. We should also note Paul's insight that the members of the body that seem to be weaker, less honorable, less respectable, are in God's eyes indispensable to be treated with greater honor and greater respect. Paul, with these words, is channeling and sharing the words and teachings of Jesus. This concern for others who seem weaker and less important are powerful words that at times I find myself needing to be more sensitive and aware of. Paul reminds the Corinthians and us that it is our differences that make us a God-given body, that our diversity and all our spiritual gifts are important and needed for a healthy community, that our gifts come from God, and utilizing our gifts honors God. And those gifts, different as they are from each other, are all valuable and all needed for the entire community to succeed. So Paul tells us about the fundamentals of maintaining community, that each individual is important, that our differences are not a weakness but a strength, and that we need to pay attention and honor all, even those who may be looked down upon, and that we need to be God-led and God-driven. But in this passage, Paul doesn't really tell us the how. How do we go about being a community? To find out the how, all we need to do is turn the page and read the next chapter. Chapter 13 of 1 Corinthians is that famous chapter on the way of love that I'm sure many of us have heard. A portion of that chapter says, "Love is patient and kind. Love does not envy or boast. It is not arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice at wrongdoing, but rejoices with the truth. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. So now faith, hope, and love abide, these three, but the greatest of these is love." We have been blessed and worked hard for our close community at Crossroads. And I do believe it is the kind of love that Paul describes in chapter 13 that has allowed the community to weather the tensions that could hurt the community. Certainly the COVID pandemic has challenged our sense of community. There have been many times that I've missed the sense of being with each other when the pandemic has required us to be apart. Thank God for the opportunities of community that we have been able to experience during this difficult time. Worship, both outside and virtually, our music ministry, Bible studies groups, the prayer chain, the United Methodist Women, the teachers and children of our children's Sunday school, the quilting group, the confirmation class, the men's group breakfast, and other activities have allowed our community to live and touch lives. What a blessing that members of our church body have shared their gifts and talents to allow our Christian body to continue to be in community in spite of these difficult times. What a gift from God. And what about the importance of community outside of our church? How do we create and foster the type of love that Paul writes about in chapter 13 in practical terms in our society today? Does anyone doubt our society is in need of a strengthened community? I don't have all the answers, but I've been helped and gained some insight through the writings of David Brooks. Brooks is a journalist for the New York Times. He has also helped found and leads a national group called Weavers. The purpose of the Weavers organization is to recognize, lift up, and support those across our society that work to weave and reweave the fabric of community in many places in our country where the social fabric of community is tearing and fraying. The mission statement of the Weavers community is, "We envision a nation of weavers brimming with deep, healthy connections, where mutual trust and affection is the standard. Equity is implicit, and all people find joy and meaning in daily life." In a recent lecture at the UW La Follette School of Public Affairs, Brooks talked about three skills that help in the weaving process to heal the wounds of alienation and let people know they are seen, heard, valued, and loved. In reality, creating community. I think these three skills are critical as we maintain our community at crossroads and as we seek to expand that community into and throughout society. Those skills are, one, see people with understanding, make them feel seen and heard. We live in a world that is good at dehumanizing people. We are confronted with a lack of trust between people. People are unsure of who they can trust. People miss being in relationships with others. By taking time to affirm people, letting them know we hear their concerns and really care for them, we go a long way in meeting needs that they may have. Second, affirm them with insight. Tell people about a complement of gifts that they may not even know they have. Everyone is a child of God with a soul. Every person has unique gifts that emanate from that soul. Knowing someone well enough and deep enough that we can help them find their gifts that they may not even know they have is truly a blessing and fosters deep relationships. And third, critique with care. Listen to someone and introduce them to new ways of thinking about themselves. When we take time to really listen to someone and then lovingly, respectfully, and carefully give them feedback, it helps them see themselves in a new way. We show a deep level of care that many long for. To me, these are great skills that result in the kind of love that Paul describes in his chapter on love. I feel being part of, supporting, and maintaining community is vital to our welfare as individuals, as Christians, as a church, and as members of our society. May we be led by God's Spirit as we all engage in the process of relationship building, of community building in all our relationships. I'd like to end with a brief clip from David Brooks.